and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
See, aren't you glad we didn't change that theme song? See,
make
people getting all hysterical.
Decision.
Change it back to we're not going to take it anymore. See, President had some fight in him. Yes, he did. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. You can't just go flip-flopping on theme songs willy-nilly. StephanieMiller.com. Check it out. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris Lavoie. Voice deity Jim Ward. Associate producer the surly Rebecca Taylor. Or me, Stephanie Miller. Hey, there's lots of good stuff up there, you know. Like, for instance, USACoffeeCompany.com.
Oh, it's StephanieMiller.com, yes.
Yes, indeed, was my point. They have Valentine's stuff, you know. There's a new idea for Valentine's Day. You can buy American, support unions, and you can get a delightful Valentine's gift. I was just perusing it.
Well, then.
Who knew? You can get a USA combo special. You can get it comes with a dark chocolate cocoa, union roast coffee, and a coffee mug.
Yummo.
All right.
And you know what you can also do at StephanieMiller.com?
What?
You can enter to win a $50 Pro Flowers gift card.
It's like magic.
I know. Just you'll see on the little menu bar something called Valentine's Day. Click on that and send us your favorite, most unusual, funniest Valentine's Day story.
It's where dreams come true, StephanieMiller.com.
That's right.
And the Stephanie Miller Show, a dream come true for Stephanie Miller, in that today we have Representative Frank Pallone on the show. We have Charlie Pierce, author of Idiot America. Ted Boutros Jr., law partner for Ted Olson, to talk about the Prop 8 trial.
That's right.
And when we can expect a ruling there. And Representative Joe Sestak, future senator from Pennsylvania. And right now, I mean, really, can you imagine being me? Richard Wolff is on the phone. Author of Renegade, The Making of an American President, and journalist extraordinaire. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
I mean, wouldn't you rather be me if you could be right now? I mean, it's...
I would rather be anyone but me, so you would be great, too.
Richard, you know, you wrote a great piece on this. I thought it was really... the word unprecedented fits for this smackdown of the GOP that the president had on Friday.
On Friday, yes, it was pretty extraordinary. And the White House was very pleased with it. So, you know, coming off what has been a very difficult patch for them, that the session went well. Well, you know, it was not like they rehearsed this, and clearly Republicans weren't expecting it, but they should have done once the cameras sort of came in there. I mean, they came up with their handing the president the plan, and they were very happy about that. But really, he got so much the better of them that the White House is trying to figure out a way to do more things like it, if not exactly
right. Well, you know, Richard, you wrote, obviously, the book on the campaign, as you were there for the whole, you got to unprecedented access through the whole thing. And, you know, that's sort of what you're saying. It was a return to the renegade character of his presidential campaign, ready to take a televised gamble unlike any other president before him. He returned to what's worked for him in the past. He's gone on the offensive in a return to the dynamic on the campaign trail.
Right.
And that's the thing I heard a lot, didn't you, is you're like, people are like, that's the guy I voted for.
Exactly. And look, he spent the first year trying to look like the president, which is kind of understandable. I mean, he is, and there are lots of things that presidents have to do, but that's not what people elected him for. They wanted him to be this fresh wind, this idea of someone who could bring change to Washington. And there's a conflict there. There's a tension between being the outside guy and running an inside game. And that's, I think, where maybe the balance hasn't been right in a first year where the economy's so bad and people desperate for the politics in Washington to look and sound and act different. And that's what we saw on Friday, the politics moving in a different direction.
Well, Richard, I think, and you even make the comparison, is people were saying, oh, they do this in Britain, but you pointed out that even Gordon Brown can alternate questions from opposition parties and softballs from his own MPs. I mean, this really was something that I don't think anyone's ever done before, have they?
Well, presidents have gone to talk to the opposition party, that's true, and Bush went to talk to the Democrats, but there were no cameras. And, you know, clearly this has to – you've got to have a conversation that goes on off camera, and members of Congress need to talk directly to – presidents without having all the media there. But the public also needs to see a debate like this happen. And they need to see the ideas thrashed out. They need to see a dialogue happen. They need to see people, whether or not they're reasonable with each other. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where, actually, the president scored a lot of points.
Well, and you, I love the way you sum it up. You say that he's been characterized as this radical socialist doing secret backroom deals. You know, so this was his moment to puncture the bubble, and that he did, I thought.
Yeah, he's not a scary guy. I mean, that's what's funny about it. And, look, he gets a lot of criticism from the left for not being radical enough, but you can't simultaneously be not radical enough and super radical. And something isn't right. And I think when people – it reminded me in the campaign when he had the whole Jeremiah Wright episode where a lot of people were saying, especially conservatives, were saying, oh, well, Wright is really what this guy is all about. He really thinks like Reverend Wright. And then you hear him talk about things like race or, in this case, the economy or health care, and you realize, well, actually, he isn't the scary caricature. And, mm-hmm. and I think when you put the two things together, a lot of regular folks who maybe aren't paying so much attention say, well, that doesn't seem right. Maybe the rhetoric is overblown, and I can get a measure of the guy just by watching him on TV.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you know, you delve into what you think his strategy is now, which I find fascinating about, you know, it's a deliberate strategy to pull them off the sidelines, you know, from this party of no strategy and get them back in the game. Do you think that's going to work?
Well, I think just appealing to their better angels isn't going to work. I mean, the idea that
clearly they have not.
Let's be generous and say that everyone has better angels. But the idea that
the devil on their one shoulder stabbed the angel with a pitchfork. There is no angel on their other shoulder.
Let's assume that the idea that you know, the president has said, well, now you're part of government. Since we only have 59 votes in the Senate, which is still a huge majority, we only have 59, then you have an obligation to lead. Well, actually, they don't have an obligation to lead. They have an obligation to oppose, and that's what they've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that argument is really going to tip the balance. But what might tip the balance is making them take tough votes on things where they have to choose between the populist anger that they've done, let's face it, a pretty good job of harnessing for themselves, and their own ideology. So when it comes to things like the bank fee, or what normal people would call the bank tax that the administration is proposing, Republicans now have to have a choice. They have to choose between the anti-bank sentiment, which fuels their own base. And,
Main Street or Wall Street, exactly.
And the Tea Parties, or their own traditional hatred of taxes and their own siding with big business. So that's the kind of politics that I think that this administration is going to pursue increasingly.
Right, but your article points out really in a way how smart that is politically, because there clearly are divisions between the teabaggers and the Limbaugh crowd and the regular, you know, Republican establishment. And you're saying, like, when he throws out stuff like tax cut for small businesses, you know, I think you point out Eric Cantor endorsed it. A week later, he seems to walk away from. I mean,
here's a tax cut, and it's aimed at small businesses, and it's for jobs. Now, you can say, well, we don't like any of this stuff, but if you liked it first and then you got to oppose it, then it looks like you're playing the same old political games. And one thing that has always worked for the president when he was a candidate and in the White House is sort of calling out the old political games.
Well, you know, we're going to play a bunch of sound clips today, Richard, of, you know, Republicans screaming about the new budget and the deficit. And meanwhile, you know, they went on record as voting against the bipartisan commission, as you point out, on fiscal responsibility to deal with budget deficits. I mean, so that's...
Yeah, no, it just sounds like politics.
Right.
And that's, again, this gets back to this idea of what's the force of change here? Who's actually calling out the politicians when they're just acting like Washington creatures? And to the extent that the White House can do that, and it's tricky being the White House doing that kind of thing, but to the extent that Obama himself can do that, I think he recaptures that spirit of 2008.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, he clearly was back in campaign mode, but, you know, as you sort of sum up, you know, your article, that Obama has his work cut out for him, the Just Say No strategy has carried the Republicans into the election year with some momentum. So, you know, obviously playing ball with him, as you point out, carries risks. What do you think? I mean, you're saying they may decide to keep it up a while longer, but, boy, many more of these back and forths, and they're getting exposed for exactly who they are.
If they're smart, they'll try and make some compromises, but I think they've had such success so far that they may just say, what the hell, we'll carry on saying no to everything, and let's see how far the White House can take it, in which case they're underestimating Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And they won't be the first.
Yeah, yeah. No, exactly. Richard, let me get your take before you go on the terror trials. Because to me, I don't think it's so important, you know, that he responded to Bloomberg. I mean, obviously, when Bloomberg got the information in about the costs and the security risks and whatever, to me, it's a logistical thing. It also has to do with the fact that I live in New York now, and it would be inconvenient for me. But
I want to make sure you're happy here.
Yes.
But to me, it's not as much a flip flop as it is just responding, to I think what could be some real logistical problems. I still think that the terror trials should be, criminal trials as the others have been in the past.
And it looks like they will be. But I don't think there's any change in that. It's the location, and the flip flop has come from New York's politicians. So it's pointless for the administration to try and steamroll this through New York when New York doesn't want it. Once the mayor buckled and the rest of the New York delegation did, there's nowhere for the administration to go. That's not a flip-flop on the administration's part. That's New York deciding that the costs are too great or the logistics are too difficult or the politics don't work for them.
Well,
the point of having a criminal trial on the U.S. mainland, I think, is the most important principle more than the geographical location.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. I mean, and I think clearly the entire machinery of government depends more on my ability to get a cab in the morning. So surely that was factored in.
Next time I see Eric Holder, I'll make sure he knows that.
Yes.
Just tell me your movements for the next several months, and we'll make sure it's okay.
Richard Wolff, journalist extraordinaire. Thank you so much, as always, for your time, sir.
My pleasure.
All right. There he goes. Richard Wolff. All right. All right. Love him.
He's great.
Mm-hmm.
And his column for the Daily Beast is awesome.
Yes.
I read it every time it comes out.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. You know, I freeze all of his columns on my computer and then I save them in Carbonite.
Wow. That takes some doing.
You know, my computer seriously contains everything in my life that makes it work. Everything we do, all sound bites for the show, right? Our show prep, I have pictures, I have financial records.
Comedy bites, those little comedy sound bites that we play?
Hello.
Yeah.
If I lost Joanne Worley, I would just quit. All right. Anyway, I use Carbonite Online Backup. It keeps all of my important files safe. What about you? Think of the panic you feel. Your heart starts racing. You feel like screaming when the inevitable computer disaster hits your computer, wiping out your important files. Now, think of the relief you'll feel because you've got Carbonite. You can back up all those important files. Carbonite Online Backup, it automatically backs up your PC or Mac whenever you're connected to the Internet. Safe, it's secure, it's easy. It's only $55 a year.
Wow.
That's right. You
yes.
heard me. Go to Carbonite.com today. Use my offer code Stephanie for this special offer. 15-day free trial plus 2 months free with your subscription. Go to Carbonite.com. Enter the offer code Stephanie for a free trial and 2 months free if you subscribe. Carbonite.com, offer code Stephanie. That's correct. 19 minutes after the hour. All right. The president's new budget and the hysterical reaction to it as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
She's your human happy pill.
Happy, happy, joy, joy, joy.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
I got
Stephanie Miller.
I get it because it's Groundhog Day.
Yes.
So, yeah. All right.
Got to play this every year.
Punxsutawney Phil says 6 more weeks of winter.
Yep.
Yeah, you're telling me. Been picking up glacial frozen dog poo for weeks.
You know, it's kind of nice here in L.A. It's a little bit cool.
Oh, by the way, I mentioned my dogs are over their Giardia that they caught here in Calcutta where I moved.
The poo disease.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And now there is a rabies outbreak in Central Park, I'm told, from the rabid raccoons. I cannot escape my critter trouble. I just can't, no matter where I go. All right.
You know, you moved to Calcutta. There's no other explanation.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Manhattan is just a filthy, filthy place, isn't it?
It's expensive, too.
Oh,
so there's that going for it.
Great.
24 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. How did I know that Republicans would be against the budget before the president announced it?
Yeah.
It's so hard to see that sort of thing coming.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans ripping into Obama's budget, criticizing the spending increases, record deficits, and tax increases on the wealthy. Because you'd hate for the top 1% to pay their fair share at any point in our... here's the thing. Why must I do all the journalistic heavy lifting in the world? I don't understand, for God's sakes.
Well, you're in Richard Wolf.
Thank you.
Okay.
Why doesn't anybody call these Republicans on their hero, Ronald Reagan? The tax rate was how much higher under him, under Eisenhower? It's like, what? Okay. And I don't know. And they just ignore, because the problem is, really everybody goes, oh, you're just blaming the Bush administration. No, you have to look at history to learn, don't you? So the deficits were created by specific policies.
Right.
So you're not just going, oh, you blame everything on George Bush. You're going, no, these same policies created this.
Yes.
First of all, not even counting the war in the budget. I think the president
pointed that out. That's absolutely inexcusable.
Yesterday, that they didn't pay for the war.
Right.
Was the Iraq War unnecessary and illegal? It wasn't even paid for. So, you know, whatever. Prescription drug benefit. You know, I can't believe there's anybody on either side of the aisle now that doesn't know that was just a big giveaway to the drug companies and it wasn't paid for.
It was not paid for. And wait till you hear Karl Rove speak about the prescription drug benefit coming up in Right Wing World. Oh, my God. Stay tuned for that one.
John Boehner. Said that Obama spoke about the...
John Boehner.
Mm-hmm. Obama spoke about the importance of fiscal responsibility at his conference retreat in Baltimore, but delivered a budget that spends too much, taxes too much, borrows too much.
John Boehner.
Harry Reid said Obama's plan prioritizes putting Americans back to work and smartly invest in infrastructure, science, and technology. He continued by going after Republicans for their no votes on the pay-as-you-go and the Conrad Gregg Debt Reduction Commission amendments last week, calling their dissent a real shame and a partisan game. Put up or shut up.
Yep.
The president yesterday...
We simply cannot continue to spend as if deficits don't have consequences, as if waste doesn't matter. As if the hard-earned tax dollars of the American people can be treated like monopoly money. As if we can ignore this challenge for another generation. We can't.
All right. So despite the president reaching across the aisle and trying to address some of their concerns with the spending freeze and other... That's what I'm saying. I do get people saying, why is he still bothering?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what he does. They're against it.
We won't be able to bring down this deficit overnight, given that the recovery is still taking hold and families across the country still need help. We will continue, for example, to do what it takes to create jobs.
You know, here's the thing. At some point, Chris, you know, there were subjects in school, you remember, that I did better. The ones that involved, BS. The ones that you... You know what I'm saying? That you could kind of...
Fill out the blue book with adjectives.
Exactly.
And, yeah,
you could, you know... Do a little fancy footwork on.
Right.
The math and science, that's a little...
Because those are concrete things.
There's no opinion there.
Right.
And that's the thing, is you'd think, the budget, can you be against things that have been, you've been able to quantitatively prove? It's not just Bush bashing. It's not just looking backward. You go, no, economists quantitatively say, I mean, you can look at, you know, numbers, and the Iraq War and the tax cuts for the rich hugely caused, I don't even know what huge percentage, see, because I'm not good at math, a huge percentage, some big percentage of this deficit.
Yeah.
I think, what did I read? That Obama's, whatever, his programs are, it accounts for 7% or something.
It's something really small like
yeah.
that.
All right. The president.
Yet over the course of the past 10 years, the previous administration and previous Congresses created an expensive new drug program, passed massive tax cuts for the wealthy, and funded two wars without paying for any of it.
Thank you. I believe I made that point.
You did.
All right. Zach in Indianapolis, our truck driver friend. Hello, Zach.
Hello, Mr. Miller. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. I was curious. I'm an independent, and I would say I probably lean more conservative on most issues. But
uh-huh.
I like to listen to both sides, because your Reagan point, that was a great point. He had an amazing tax rank. But when I was, it's hard. I don't listen to Rush Limbaugh or Hannity either, because I hear a lot of the same, teabagger jump.
All right, he's going to tell me my show's junior high after the break. 29 minutes after the hour. Whatever. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Well, it's Groundhog Day, and that must mean that we're up here at Gobbler's Knob, waiting for the forecast from the world's most famous groundhog weatherman, Punxsutawney Phil.
Gobbler's Knob.
Oh, jeez.
He said Gobbler's Knob.
Yeah, he did.
34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number toll free from anywhere. In a completely unrelated story, Don't Ask, Don't Tell will be debated for the very first time in 17 years. Today, and we also are having an update on Prop 8 from one of the lawyers on Ted Olson's team.
Yes.
What a day. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number.
What a day for the gay.
Okay. Anyway, what was I going to say? Oh, Trucker couldn't hold on, but he just wanted to say that my show is like junior high or whatever.
Whatever.
Okay. Tom in Hollywood, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Stephanie, I own a small business, and I have a question. How is it that the Republicans can show up for work, do nothing, and still get paid? I really don't think that's fair for the rest of us hardworking Americans out there that go to work every day, work hard,
yeah,
get something done productively, and we get paid, but why should they get paid?
Yep.
Is that just a welfare check for them?
No, you know, Tom, it's a good point. Can you imagine going into any business, and obviously in any business it revolves around, to some degree, coming up with new ideas, mm-hmm, right, or something, or sales strategy. Can you imagine if they're just the people sitting there every time, no, we don't like that, no. It's like, well, then what do you like? Do something.
Okay, says no.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Tom.
I'm fired. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Let's go to Michael in L.A. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Mike.
Hey, by the way, guys, as far as favorite movies,
yes,
I'd say that Groundhog Day is, like, way, way up there.
Oh.
It's probably number one for me. It's really, I really love it.
It's a really good movie.
Oh, it's great. It's great. And who would have thought doing the same thing over and over and over again wouldn't get boring, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't wait for the Cher song.
Yeah.
Here it comes again.
Anyway, there's a legitimate reason why the Republicans should be obstructionists and stopping Obama from doing anything. There really isn't. Because if they don't, then one of them might try and run for office again.
Yeah.
I mean, and we can't have that.
Yeah, I know. Well, look, that's, you know, what Richard Wolff was just saying, Michael, is that's part of the problem, is this strategy they feel to some degree is working for them going into an election year. But
it's especially working for their racist tendencies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was. Oh, by the way, can I have my good news music, please? You would send me a.
Do we have good news music?
Yeah. Whatever.
All right.
All right. I just like to make sure you're paying attention.
I'm paying attention.
Whatever. There is a poll, because here's the thing. I think going into an election year, it's all a psych you out game.
Yes.
And they like that, just because of one election in Massachusetts, they want to try to, you know, freak people out and, oh my God, they're going to take back control and it's the end of the Democratic Party and blah, blah, blah. A new Gallup poll shows that most states remain blue. Despite Republican performances in some recent off-year elections, most states still favor Democratic candidates. According to a new survey by Gallup, the results found that far more states are safe havens for Democrats than the GOP. Democrats can count 24 states solidly blue.
Mm-hmm.
Another 10 counted as lean Democratic. Republicans can only point to four. Four solid states.
That's
amazing. And only one state leans Republican.
Yet the mainstream media won't report that.
No! That's why you need the Stephanie Miller newscast.
Absolutely.
Isn't that sad? Gallup identified 12 states as competitive. Meanwhile, 49% say they lean Democratic in the poll, 41% Republican. So, you know, I'm just saying, particularly after the president's, kick-ass the other day, I think we got a little fight left in us, don't we?
We certainly do.
All right, Christine Romer on the economy.
For the unemployment rate, the administration projects that we will end 2010 with an unemployment rate at approximately 9.8%. By the fourth quarter of 2011, it's projected to be 8.9%. And by the fourth quarter of 2012, 7.9%.
Oh, no. Good news for America, bad news for Republicans.
Yes, it is.
I mean, that's the only thing I'll say, is that is a tough place to be, in that you are really rooting against the American people in a way and against our economy. And that's a tough place to be in because this is serious out here.
That's
right. This is not, this is people's lives.
Republicans are rooting against people getting jobs.
Mm-hmm. Senator Jeff Sessions, Republican of Alabama.
We're talking about $1.6 trillion in deficit this budget, first budget year, which would be the largest deficit in the history of the American Republic, even larger than last year, which was triple the deficit the year before.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing how there just was not a peep out of him.
Nope.
These deficits were being run up.
Nope.
By previous administration. Senator Mitch McChinless, Republican of Kentucky.
This budget is more of the same, mm-hmm. more spending, more taxes, and more debt.
Why do they get to keep saying that when the president so clearly laid out that taxes have been cut for 95% of the American people?
They have.
Okay. Senator Judd Gregg, Republican of New Hampshire.
We are going to double the federal debt in the next 5 years under the president's budgets. And triple it in the next 10 years. Triple the debt in 10 years. I mean, these are numbers that are staggering.
Oh.
Are you okay? You look like you have a headache in your eye.
It's just a caller brought this up about how Rachel Maddow did that little game show, you know, quiz show on her show to illustrate the biggest debts in history have been run up by Republican presidents, including their hero, Ronald Reagan.
It's stunning
that they suddenly have this newfound...
Yeah, that deficit took years to dig out of.
Yeah.
It took Bill Clinton to take care of that one.
Yeah, and the problem is, you know, we're just in a really unprecedented place in the economy. And so I think as the president was saying the other day, you've got to cut back where you can and you've got to spend where you can. You have to be smart about what, you know, And meanwhile, they're on record already as against the jobs bill, against, what do you call it, the tax cut for small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
But seriously, what are they for? Except the same policies that got us into this mess. It makes no sense to me.
They keep whining that the Democrats are painting them as the party of no, but they keep proving that they're the party of no by opposing every single thing that's proposed.
No, they don't.
I see what you did there.
See, all right.
You're right.
So, right-wing tool Mike Pence, Republican of Indiana.
Yes.
He of the recent ass-kicking by the president.
Yes.
T and then a he. He was on the Fox and Freaks. Did you see that?
No.
Trying to refute the claim that Republicans have become the party of no, he falsely claimed the Republicans stood strongly for defense spending. He said, well, there were a number of bills that we did support the administration on, most especially regarding our troops and regarding our veterans. We kept our word. We set politics aside and stood strongly with the president in his call for reinforcement and for funding. Except you may want to load the liar cannon because that's not so much actually true.
Lie, 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 lie. Why must you be such a fat liar?
So odd that the journalistic integrity of the Fox and Freaks would not have kicked into play there.
Right.
In reality, Republicans in both the House and the Senate have blocked defense spending for political reasons, which is weird. On October 8th, Pence joined the Boehner, House Minority Leader John Boehner, and 129 other Republicans in the House in voting against the 2010 Department of Defense authorization bill. Pence and Boehner opposed the bill because, wait for it, the measure included hate crimes provisions designed to protect the gays and
homosexuals.
Yes. Republicans in the Senate followed Pence and Boehner obstructionist lead in December, filibustering the 2010 Department of Defense Appropriations Act as a way of delaying the Senate health care vote. Remember they were trying to get it done by Christmas, the Democrats?
Right.
So suddenly they realized that they thought that needed a much longer debate, you see. So they held up that defense authorization, and you know how quickly they would scream the Democrats hated the troops back during the – if you held up for a second –
yep.
Any troop funding request to ask a question or two. And so they're just bald-faced liars.
Why do Republicans hate the troops?
I don't know. Why do they hate America so much? Yeah, it wasn't that important to fund the troops when it might protect the gays. Apparently then that was... Wow, this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
All right. Jeff in Jacksonville, Florida, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hi, Jeff.
Stephanie, it's selfishness. The Republicans are for selfishness. That's what they, that when you look at their policies, when you look at what they believe in and what they fight for, it's for keeping everything they have. And when it comes to helping anybody else, even if it's helping somebody means voting for something Obama put forward, then they might get not reelected for.
That's true.
They're not going to do it.
No, that's true, John. They're not, or Jeff, excuse me, they're not, it's not so much even just the party of no, it is the party of me, me, me. It's,
exactly.
You know, as I always say, I think it's getting people, it's playing to their worst instincts, you know, the fear-mongering, the, look at even Scott Brown in the health care thing. It really is about, you know, we have health care, you don't want to help other people, you know? I mean, that's...
So, lucky us. And they always talk about, well, if you raise taxes, the entrepreneurs won't want to do this. People that want to make money. And it doesn't matter what, how much that is. And if they make more and they have to pay a little more, they're still going to want to make money. They're going to complain that they have to give more away. But like you said, they're paying a smaller percentage now than ever.
Mm-hmm. What was, Jeff, I forget, but I think the number I heard under Eisenhower was 70%. The tax rate was 70%.
Yes. That's correct.
It was something like that, yep.
Yeah. I mean, it just really is unbelievable that they try to, you know, paint him as this big tax and spend socialist when, like I say, every biggest debt in history has been run up by a Republican and the tax rate was way higher. Jeff, thank you so much for your call. All right. Here's one thing that I think might be a trick. I think this might be the Charlie Brown football.
Yes.
Why are you looking at me like that?
Because you didn't hang up on him. You made me do it.
You know, I even through Skype, I can see your snarkiness.
Sorry.
It's amazing how dirty looks can just be translated through any kind of technology. All right. 45 minutes after the hour, back with Right Wing World and much more as we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Highbrow, lowbrow, unibrow. It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Aha! 50 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Representative Frank Pallone coming up on the Newsmaker Hotline in just a few minutes.
No, not your date to the Playboy Mansion. That was Frank Stallone.
Stallone. Different. Mm-hmm. Different. I learned that the hard way through several of my first interviews with Frank Pallone. Congressman from New Jersey. All right. Jane in Florida on the president. Hey, Jane.
Hi. I'm Jane from Florida. How you doing?
Good.
I want to talk about the issue about the Obama and McCain. You know, no matter which president we have to deal with it. The McCain one, we have to deal with them. The Obama one, we have to deal with. Why can't we both all learn how to get along and become a team player with each other and learn to work with our whatever subject we have?
Because the Republicans are a bunch of obstructionist douches.
You know, and, you know, Obama's our president, so we need to learn how to work with him.
All right. That's right. Jane. All right. Thank you, Jane.
That went right over her head.
All right.
I don't even
think. Jane wasn't interested in listening to my side. That was interesting because that was what she was going to talk about.
Yeah.
And she was apparently calling from underwater at SeaWorld in Florida because I couldn't understand her either. Okay, Grace in Minneapolis. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, Grace.
Well, I'm driving in a crappy commute, but hopefully you can hear me.
All right, I can hear you.
I think they should change the GOP to the NOPE.
Hey,
you see how you made a joke.
Yeah, that's all I got for you today.
All right, thank you, Grace.
That's
all
it.
Right. You know, we all got one zinger a day in us, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
That was Grace. She'll be telling that one all day.
Try spreading one zinger out through 3 hours of talk radio. Good Lord, that's hard every day.
It's like Zinger Taffy. Yeah. Just keep trying to pull it. Oh, it's just we're just time fillers in radio. That's all we are.
That's what we do.
All right, here's the political, the Charlie Brown football I think we have to be careful of. When the boner says he's for anything that might be helpful.
John Boner.
What did he say now?
Mm-hmm. He says he agrees with progressives that Obama's spending freeze should not exclude defense spending.
Mm-hmm.
Since, as you know, the president... Mm-hmm. Since he announced his intention to enact a spending freeze on non-security domestic discretionary spending in the federal budget, progressives have been calling on him, Nancy Pelosi, as we've talked
right.
about, to include the massive budgets of the Department of Defense and Homeland Security. Lawrence Korb has suggested the White House has been reluctant to exclude these out of fear of appearing weak on defense.
Hmm.
Which Sean Hannity will call you no matter what you do, so you might as well just... I don't know whether this is a trick, but it's true. There's a lot of fat in there, right?
Absolutely.
We're not talking about, obviously, anything that's going to make us less safe or not take care of the troops. It's just, clearly, when you can cut an F-22 program or there's other... You know, massive size, like contractors like Blackwater that have got God knows where
right.
all our money is.
The F-22, of course, is the plane that won't fly in the rain. Is that?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
It seems someone should have thought of that. I'm not an aeronautical engineer of any type, but I might have even thought to ask that. You know, will this fly in the rain? Okay, so, yes, on Meet the Press, the boner. Said he agreed. He said, I don't think any agency of the federal government should be exempt from rooting out wasteful spending or unnecessary spending. I frankly would agree with it at the Pentagon. There's got to be wasteful spending there, unnecessary spending. I'm just saying, is it a trick? And then we go, all right. And then he's like, oh, we got a friend that should be at the top of our list, protecting the American people.
He's on tape saying that.
Saying
what? See, he's on record saying.
They don't care. They're shameless.
We could play it back for him.
Don't care if they're on tape.
And then he'll cry about it.
Speaking of which, let's dive into the right-wing world. There's a bunch of people caught on tape. They don't care. They'll just say, like Dick Cheney, they'll be like, no, I didn't say that. Yes, it's on, no, I didn't. Okay.
You have said in the past that it was, quote, pretty well confirmed.
No, I never said that.
Okay.
That's absolutely not. What I said was the Czech intelligence service reported after 9/11, that Atta had been in Prague on April 9th of 2001, where he allegedly met with an Iraqi intelligence official. We have never been able to confirm that, nor have we been able to knock it down. It's been pretty well confirmed that he did go to Prague and he did meet with a senior official of the Iraqi intelligence service in Czechoslovakia last April.
Here's the thing, though, I think I've since realized, Chris, is that, because I often used to scream that during the Bush administration, remember, I'd say, why doesn't any journalist do that? Why don't they just play the tape back for the Bush administration official? But then I realized, like, he would still deny it.
He would.
He would be like, no, I didn't. It's right here. I just played it. I'll play it again. No, I didn't. That's not me. No.
That's my doppelganger.
Gerald in South Carolina, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, Gerald.
Hey, Steph, do you think that the Republicans would be acting the same way they are now had Hillary Clinton been elected president?
Oh, of course. Of course. They're Republicans.
Yeah. I just wondered if this was the I hate Obama thing and they're just not going to cooperate with all.
Well, in this case, it's a lot to do with I hate the black guy. And in that case, it would have been I hate the chick.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Glad I could clear that up. By the way, that Gallup poll I was just citing about red states.
Yes.
Just saying.
Oh, stop it.
The really red states, I just smell a whiff of, racism. Idaho, you know what I'm saying. You know which ones they are. You know.
Utah.
The really red states. Yes. You can take a whiff. You can smell the racism and homophobia from here, can't you? All right.
You can't smell any soul food, that's for sure.
All right. Carl Rove on the prescription drug program.
President Obama has attacked the Bush Medicare prescription drug plan in two ways. One, by saying it wasn't generous enough, and two, by saying it was too costly, it wasn't paid for. But what's interesting to me is he has made absolutely no move to pay for it, so to speak.
To pay for, I'm sorry, your prescription drug program? That you passed that was a giveaway to the drug companies.
Can you believe Karl Rove had the huevos to say that?
I'm sorry, he didn't pay for your big mistake, and
right.
So I see. Yes, he said it wasn't enough in that, yes, it clearly was a giveaway to the drug companies and not to the people, and it was expensive and not paid for.
Yes.
So the president's points are well taken. Wow, he's like, well, which is it? And furthermore, why didn't you pay for it? What? It's like the Bush administration skipped out on their chick at a restaurant. They're like, why? And he was sitting next to them. He's like, why didn't you pay my check? What?
Skipped out on your chick?
Check. Your check at a restaurant.
Right. I thought you said chick. Like you, left your date at the table.
I'm sure that's how it happened to Karl Rove many times. All right. Charles Krauthammer on the...
The reason the Democrats are running away is not the expense of a trial. It's because of what happened in Massachusetts. It was seized upon by a Republican. This is lunacy in how you treat terror. And Democrats are running scared because it's going to be an issue in November.
Oh, Democrats like Michael Bloomberg. Oh, Bloomberg is a Republican. Mm-hmm. So is he running scared? It has not to do with anything in Massachusetts. Michael Bloomberg, Republican, was for it until he got, obviously, the cost estimates, the security estimates, the logistical.
And until he found out you were in up in arms about it.
Thank you.
Because you can't get a cab.
I can't get a cab now. As it is, you know, listen, there are a lot of concerns in terms of our country. All right. And it all comes back to me.
Absolutely.
58
It always
minutes.
Does.
Thank you. 58 minutes after the hour. Back with more Right Wing World and Representative Frank Pallone, Democrat of New Jersey, as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Six minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12. The phone number toll-free from anywhere, stephaniemiller.com. Check it out. You can email us all there. Executive producer, Chris LeBoy, voice deity, Jim Ward, associate producer, Rebecca Taylor, or me, Stephanie Miller. All right. Lots to get to. Ted Boutros Jr., law partner to Ted Olson. Mm-hmm. We'll be calling in next hour to talk about the conclusion of the Prop 8 trial out here in California. Representative Joe Sestak as well next hour. Charlie Pierce also coming up this hour, author of Idiot America, humorist extraordinaire.
Yes, he's funny.
Mm-hmm. That's what a humorist is. Thank
really?
You for explaining.
And not an idiot.
Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, he's not an idiot.
Thank you
he's
for
an
explaining.
Expert on Idiot America, but he's not himself an idiot.
No, which is why he can document it so humorously, which means funny, Chris. All right.
Thank you.
Let's go to Representative Frank Pallone of the great state of New Jersey. Good morning, sir.
Hi, Stephanie. How you doing?
Good. Good to talk to you.
You too.
We were talking about the president's budget. It wasn't hard to predict that the Republicans are against it, which
against
I think
everything.
They were before it came out.
I know.
But what's your take?
I think it's a good, good proposal. I mean, look, we're in tough times. I mean, on the one hand, we want to make sure that we continue spending and giving tax relief in order to create more jobs. But at the same time, we have to deal with the deficit over the long term. So what he's essentially saying is, look, I want to create, I want to spend some money on infrastructure, you know, highways, mass transit, to create more jobs. And I want to give tax relief to small businesses and those who are going to start to hire more people. So that costs money. But at the same time, over the long run, I have to try to reduce this deficit and look towards freezing, you know, some accounts. So I think that's the best you can do under the circumstances.
Right. Well, I mean, that's what I was saying is that, you know, it seems even to the casual observer, someone that's not a congressperson or an economist, that these are kind of unprecedented times. That,
exactly.
You know, we obviously have to do something about the unemployment situation. And it seems to me this is a pretty good mix of, like you say, of trying to reel in costs and save where we can, but to also spend where we can.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, I know I'm going back to the previous stimulus, but people forget that the stimulus that we passed last year was pretty much the same. I mean, about half of it was tax relief, and the other half was spending on infrastructure and, you know, job creation. But you know, that costs money, and it does create more of a deficit. But at the same time, you know, the deficit can't be the priority right now, because if you just take all the money out of the system, you can't create any jobs, and people don't spend anything, and then you end up with a worse recession, which only creates a larger deficit. So, It's kind of a balancing act.
Right. Well, I mean, I guess as we've said over and over, I just think that at this point, it is just not really up for dispute whether the stimulus is working. I think, the exact number of jobs you can dispute, but I think that, you know, as the president clearly laid out the other day, there's, you know, you lost X hundred thousand jobs, you know what I mean, under Bush each month, and we're going in the right direction. You can quantitatively prove it.
I agree, and it's like, you know, there's this collective amnesia. You know, I was talking to a couple people the other day, and I was telling them that, you know, we had to do the stimulus because, you know, we were facing the possibility of the depression. And they said, oh, that's not true. There wasn't going to be any depression. And I said, well, you know, that's like the Monday morning quarterback. Oh, cause sure, now you can say there wasn't going to be depression because of what we did. But there was a real possibility of that, and, you know, And it's also the fact that, you know, how did we get into this situation? Because of all the Bush tax cuts and all the spending on, you know, Iraq and the wars. I mean, you know, everything comes back. You can't ignore the past.
Right. And I was saying before the break, John Boehner, just when he says something, I always feel like it must be a trick. He said he agrees with progressives that the defense budgets ought to be part of the spending freeze.
I agree with that.
That there's waste there as well.
Well, I'm going to say a freeze necessarily, but I think that we have to start cutting items and looking at defense in the same way that we look at the domestic budget. And the bottom line is there's so much waste in the defense budget. I mean, you know, what was the guy years ago, Senator Proxmire, used to have the give awards like for the $750 toilet or the $600 hammer.
Right.
I mean, there's so much of that that still goes on, you know, and you got to look at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, all I wonder is, is it me that lacks trust in the Republican side that will be the political Charlie Brown football we'll go yes, and then I'll be like, you're weak on defense.
Well, I mean, the problem is that I'm not saying all Republicans, but the leadership is just this, you know, kind of Dr. No policy, you know, that. I mean, it wasn't even clear that they were going to support some of these tax cuts. I mean, you know, the president is talking about, you know, tax credits for businesses that hire new employees, and he's talking about a lending program where they give money to community banks so that they can lend money to small businesses. And I mean, some of the Republicans were even saying they didn't like this. Well, what do you like? You know, if you don't like the tax cuts, I mean, supposedly, mm-hmm.
Was that, Congressman Pallone, was that not a thing of beauty, the smackdown of the Republicans that the president engaged in on Friday?
Well, I think he's just pointing out that we want them to be involved. I mean, you know, when the country's has problems, everybody has an obligation to work together, it seems to me, and not just be in a 24-hour, 365-day-a-year campaign mode, I say. I mean, that's what I think he was saying.
Yep, exactly. Well, I think now it's time. It's either lead, follow, or get out of the way, and I think he pretty clearly teed that up.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Congressman Pallone, we always appreciate your time. Thanks for fighting a good fight there in Jersey.
Take care.
All right. Thank you, sir. There he goes. All right, here's how I plan to stimulate the economy. I am buying Jim Ward a $7,000 talking sex robot.
Ooh. A what?
First the iPad, now this. Could I have my squeezy music,
yes,
please?
Yes, give it to me, baby. That's how Mama likes it.
Check this out. Hi, technology's just... I barely understood. You had to explain the iPad to me.
It's a piece of crap is what the iPad is.
Ooh.
To some men, she might seem like the perfect woman. She's a willowy 5'7", 120 pounds. She'll chat with you endlessly about your interests. This is pretty much me, isn't it?
That's you. Yeah, except you don't put out. Ask
and
Al Sparks.
And she'll have sex whenever you please. That's me.
No, it's not.
Oh, it depends on how much Chardonnay. Oh. As long as her battery doesn't run out. Meet Roxy, who may be the world's most sophisticated talking female sex robot.
I am the most sophisticated female talking sex robot, but my battery is running low.
For $7,000, Jim, she's all yours. I work a lot cheaper. I don't know what. She doesn't vacuum or cook, me neither. but she does almost everything else, says her inventor. Powered by a computer under her soft silicone skin, she employs voice recognition and speech synthesis software to answer questions and carry on conversations. She even comes loaded with five distinct personalities, from Frigid Para to Wild Wendy, that can be programmed to suit customers' preferences.
Customers? Oh. What, you pass her around?
I am playing hard to get.
Apparently some guys like that.
I'm in the hard-to-get mode.
They want Frigid Farah, apparently. Okay, let's see here. She has Roxy has sensors in her hands and genital areas.
Oh, baby.
That will trigger vocal responses from her when touched.
Oh, yes. God, yes.
She even... I don't know if it's not a turn-on if it sounds like Tim Ward.
Or if it sounds like a speaking spell.
John Boner.
She even...
Show me your John Boner.
John Boner. John Boner. John Boner.
She even shudders to simulate orgasm.
Oh.
John Boner.
When someone speaks to Roxy, her computer converts the words to text and then uses pattern recognition software to match them against a database containing hundreds of appropriate responses. That's what I do, and yet I always manage to say the wrong thing. How does that work?
I do not recognize that pattern in my database. Must destroy. Must destroy. Must destroy.
The robot.
Daisy. Daisy.
How did I know we were going to go there eventually? The robot then answers aloud, but a pre-recorded voice is supplied by an unnamed radio host through a loudspeaker hidden under her wig.
Hope it's not Mark Levin.
Yeah. There goes your John Boner.
Yeah, you're sarcastic.
Anyone who knows Stephanie Miller, and there aren't many, knows she has no audience. She's been up and coming for 20 years. She's sarcastic. An ultra-left wing.
Why can't I get that gig? I bet you Randy Rhodes didn't, because, you know, time checks just make a man feel pressure.
Yeah. It's,
come on, do it! 15 after!
Hurry up!
All right. Thank you for that new product. That is very exciting.
Things have not been quite right with me lately.
Let's go to Charles in L.A. real quick. Hey, Charles! Welcome.
Yes. Welcome to you. And, you know, it was great to see the president at work dealing with those Republicans, and he did a great job.
Yeah, didn't he, though?
He did. Fantastic.
Yeah.
But now my concern is the ongoing discrimination against liberal talk show hosts.
Yeah. Let's talk about me.
Yeah. I mean, unlike the right-wing talk show hosts, we don't see you and the other liberals on The View or the morning talk shows or the late-night talk shows. You know, you're not getting quoted at the press conference in front of Robert Gibbs like some of these right-wing knuckleheads are. And that's just wrong.
Exactly.
That's just wrong.
We need more attention from me.
That's because they actually put up a fight. The, you know, these right-wing shows want people who don't put up a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Charles, thank you. You know, kids, I got an email from Maureen. It says, Steph, it sounds like P90X is now a sponsor, but I want to let you know it really does work. If you ever try it, you will be crying the first couple of days. However, it helped me lose.
Is that a good thing?
I cry every day anyway, so I just want to be doing something good for myself. However, it helped me lose 20 pounds after I had my daughter have fun. Maureen, who is, I got actually a bunch of mail yesterday from P90X users.
Is that
users.
The Tony Horton little creation there, outfit? I used to know him, actually.
Really? It's a new fitness program, and it's fabulous. Mm-hmm. I told you the guy that owns the show that's trying to kill me and I are both going to do it.
Yes.
Because this has become now a death match.
He's trying to get me to do it, too.
you need to be more buff. But anyway, as you know, I take my health seriously. I do spinning. Mm-hmm. I do. But pretty much everything in New York, too expensive. P90X, it is affordable and it works. It's a home workout. It includes strength training, cardio, yoga, you name it. You're always working your body from different angles so you don't plateau, you don't get overuse injuries, and more importantly, you don't get bored.
Wow.
Hmm?
Who's going to lug the weights upstairs to your place for you?
The guy that owns the show. Going to make him do that part. How many of you have gym memberships and you don't use or exercise your exercise equipment that is just sitting there gathering dust, or it's a hanger of some sort? Jim, you've had you've mentioned that you have exercise equipment that you use.
Yes, I've got an elliptical trainer. I use it several times a week. Got an exercise bike. I've got
Most people use them as a hanger for clothes. I'm going to be taking the P90X challenge, posting my results online. I challenge you, especially dudes. Especially dudes, let's do the same. Let's see if we can go from soft to rock hard and ripped in just 90 days. By the time the weather warms up, we will all be in the best shape of our lives. P90X, it comes completely risk-free, guarantee our results and satisfaction. Get off your duff, make the call today, 800-509-9438. That's 800-509-9FIT. That's easy to remember, 800-509-9FIT. Or go to my website, stephaniemiller.com.
Yep. There's a banner ad there.
Check out the banner ad. 19 minutes after the hour, more right-wing world as we continue. On the Stephanie Miller Show.
She's the life of the Democratic Party. Ignore the lampshade. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
How many times must I look at that damn groundhog today? Okay, 6 more weeks of winter. And the Dow is up 45 points. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere.
23 after.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. David in Washington State, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, Dave.
Good morning, Stephanie.
Hello.
Hey, it was Dick Cheney that stated that deficits don't matter. And another thing, I think you and Ed Schultz should get together and invite all the Fox talk show hosts and Mark Levin, all the ones that have been trashing Barack Obama and the progressive agenda, to like a battle of the talk show hosts kind of a scenario, and just really challenge. I mean, invite.
Yeah, they won't do that because they're giant pusses. But but thanks for the suggestion.
In a word.
Meow. Let's go to Karen in Madison. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Karen.
Hi, Stephanie. Love your show.
Thank you.
And I wanted to make a comment regarding the national debt and the which party was responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Another angle that the Republicans are claiming is, even though it happened under Republican presidents, it wasn't their fault. It was really the democratically controlled Congress. Well, they're wrong again on that because, number one, all the presidents, whether they're Democrat or Republican, have a veto pen, and if they didn't want something to pass, they could have vetoed it.
Right.
And number two, under Reagan, he had a Republican majority in the Senate for 6 years. And under Bush Jr., he had everything a president could want. He had both houses with a majority,
yep.
Republican majority, for 6 years. So they're wrong again as far as blaming the democratically controlled Congress.
Yep, absolutely. All right, good point. Smartest girl in school.
Republicans like deficits because liberals can't spend on social programs then.
They like
to run up huge deficits. Hey, we got no money left.
Oops.
We bought all these expensive weapons for an enemy that no longer exists.
And that can't fly in the rain.
Oh, well.
Oops. Poor people got screwed again. Oh, well. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's continue with Right Wing World. O'Reilly on the health care.
If President Obama was really sincere and wanted to engage the GOP on health care, he'd give them tort reform. And federal law does override state law, so they could pass. You can compete anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't do it. And so the people say the only reason on earth that they wouldn't do it is ideological. It comes right back to the left-wing philosophy.
Have you noticed that all the right-wing callers on the show, Jim, that's the whole of health care reform is tort
reform. Which
means the only thing they
we're not allowing citizens to sue companies that kill their family members.
Right. My family has personal experience with, my aunt took Fen-Phen and got a hole in her heart and had to have this expensive drug that was pumped directly into her heart, and she wouldn't have been able to pay for it unless she sued the makers of Fen-Phen and got a settlement.
Mm-hmm. That selfish bitch. All right.
That's why we need tort reform.
Yeah. And
if
there were tort reform, she wouldn't be able to do that.
Yep, mm-hmm.
She'd be dead.
Exactly.
That's my point. That's why we need tort reform.
Hannity and prostitute toe sucker Dick Morris.
You need to write a column, he's no Clinton, in terms of his ability to moderate.
Well, did you see the one I wrote? They said, can he triangulate? And I said, how many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? One, if he really wants to change.
I just came up with that.
Wow, really?
Are you okay?
You okay, Jim? Wow, that really, I mean, we thought a run on Republican talking point winded him. His own hilarity almost killed him there. We got to hear that again.
Oh, you want to hear it again? Okay.
Yeah.
Here we go.
You need to write a column, he's no Clinton, in terms of his ability to moderate.
Well, did you see the one I wrote? They said, can he triangulate? And I said, how many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? One, if he really wants to change.
No, that's he even got the joke wrong. The bulb has to want to change.
Yeah, it's not the bulb, not the psychiatrist, you moron. He's one of those people that gets overexcited when telling his own jokes.
And
also, I love that he's quoting his own column. Did you see what I said? That
was a peanut walking down the street, two and one. And then one was assaulted. I meant, because it was...
He got overexcited.
So I'm in the Denny's.
He got Folks, I didn't screw up the joke.
You did.
All right. James O'Keefe. Oh, heavens.
Yes.
Is this his pre-prison tour on Hannity?
Uh-huh. Yes. Trying to clean up his image.
I think while I continue to do sort of undercover videos, I have to be a little more careful, a little more thoughtful.
Yeah, when you're in
prison. And I'd have to, the sort of investigative tools I use, I'll have to, you know, think about it.
Investigative tools.
Yeah, like I look out for the investigative tools in the shower in prison if I were you.
Oh, dude. He's an investigative tool, all right.
Yeah, I'll have to be a little more. Oh, I'm sure that the police will be fine with that. Oh, you'll be a little more careful? Okay, then.
All right, then.
We'll let you go. All right. Veritas. 29 minutes after the hour. Back with Charlie Pierce next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
You off to see the groundhog?
Yes, I am.
You think it's going to be an early spring?
I'm predicting March 21st.
34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere.
That'd be the vernal equinox.
Exactly. It's our happy time. Why?
Why?
Por qué?
Why?
Because it's Tuesday, and that means it's time for Charlie
Maury?
Pierce. Pardon me?
Maury?
No, no Maury. Charlie Pierce,
oh, okay.
Author of Idiot America. Good morning!
Hi, so the groundhog came out of his den and looked up and said, holy cow, Avatar got nominated for Best Picture.
That's right.
What a shock.
I didn't realize there were like 10 Best Picture nominees this year.
I thought it was a mistake, and Chris said, I'm like, what? Was like every film out nominated this year?
Yeah, it's like the first time in 65 years they've had 10 instead of just 5.
Are they having like participation ribbons at the Oscars? Yeah.
That's what it is. Charlie, I was saying.
I'll tell you though, I am happy because I really like District 9 and I'm glad it was nominated for Best Picture.
I did too. Mm-hmm. That was
a great movie. It's like a T-ball. You're right. Yeah. I guess everyone that participated gets a little nomination this year.
We don't want weepy at the, you know, at the Screen Actors Guild Awards. Cause it,
And I'm glad Up got nominated too.
Yes, that's another one I didn't see.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Up, not to be confused with Up in the Air, which was also nominated.
Yes, which was also a very, very
good
movie.
That's a very good. Mm-hmm. Anyone who spends any time in airports loves that movie because it's absolutely true.
Yes.
You know, as you know, Charlie,
except for the hooking up with the stranger part, which is not true.
Yeah, damn it.
As you know, right?
No.
What? Charlie, as you know, I am an elderly shut-in, so you know what? I'm just going to go with anything Sandra Bullock is in.
Yeah.
I like.
And
the Blind Side?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Blind
Side. Oh, Stephanie.
Yep.
The other thing, Stephanie, is you live in a town where there are practically no movie theaters anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
There's nowhere to go to see a movie anywhere in your neighborhood, I'm sure.
Well, that's because everybody goes to the Academy to see screenings, because everybody's a member of the Academy.
I don't know. I just like the chick flicks. So it used to be anything Julia Roberts is in. Now it's anything Sandra Bullock is in. It's that's my vote.
Okay.
All right.
But that was a football movie. That wasn't a chick flick.
But it was both, which is it's hard to pull off.
Okay. That's true, because the guy was really a big football player.
Well, in Goldie Hawn, he pulls off the same thing in whatever movie that was. Anyway, let's move on.
Wildcat.
Exactly. All right. Charlie Pierce, I hate to live in the past, like let's say last Friday, but how about that ass whooping the president gave the Republicans?
Yeah, it was really pretty funny because if you didn't know before that there were like no ideas on that side of the table, you do now.
Right.
I mean, it looked like a bunch of people who sit around plotting to take over the board of directors for the local Kiwanis. This is the best you've got? This is and I don't mean to laugh because a lot of these people are probably going to get elected senator next time around. But, oh my Lord. I thought Jason Chaffetz was going to cry about, you know, lobbyists. And I gotta tell you something. Marsha Blackburn.
Yes.
Look out, Michelle Bachmann. There's another. There's a new loon in town. She was going to ask a question. Her question had a 40-minute premise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the president called him on it. They just were doing talking points.
Right. And
are we going to have a conversation, or say talking points to each other?
Well, my favorite part was oh, by the way, guys, you know all those photos of you guys at ribbon cuttings from the stimulus money? I've got all of those.
Yeah.
I know.
I'm making an album.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But, I mean, I know that, you know, you've been one of the progressives that's been disheartened a little bit? I mean, do you feel like between the State of the Union and that, do you have a little more hope?
Well, I have a little more hope that they're beginning to get it. I mean, I want to see a little bit more action on this. I don't like the chickening out on the terror trials. I don't like the the kind of, you know, now we're starting to fumble and mumble about the Consumer Protection Agency and the financial reforms, which worries me a little bit. But then again, challenged to produce a budget. This guy Paul Ryan from Wisconsin has actually produced one that wipes out the deficit. Unfortunately, everybody over the age of 55 is going to be eating sand for the rest of their lives.
Speaking of the terror trials, Robert Gibbs, White House Press Secretary, said this yesterday.
Richard Reed, who tried to blow up an airliner, a story not dissimilar to what we've seen. Again, a plot masterminded by Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, was tried in Boston, Massachusetts.
Do you think they're backing away from... I just think they were bowing to the logistical concerns of New York and of Bloomberg, but not necessarily on the military tribunal thing.
I think Bloomberg got rolled by his cops. And it's always dangerous when New York mayors get rolled by their cops, because that's what happened with Rudy Giuliani. And that was... I mean, you can put this guy on trial in Lower Manhattan. Give me a break. You know, I mean, you've got the finest police force in the world. And history tells us that they're not going to come and try to blow up the building and let a guy escape.
Well,
whoever this guy worked for has already written him off.
Right, Charlie. Okay? Had I not moved to New York, I would have agreed with you. But now.
As Robert Gibbs said, I mean, here I was going to work in Boston every day without knowing that I was in tremendous peril of my life.
Yes.
Because shoe bomber guy was being tried.
Right.
Although I did hear somebody make an interesting proposal the other day on one radio show or another, which is to simply have the trial in Denver. That way you can save the transportation charge of getting him to the Supermax.
I mean, you want that? Listen, we all got to save gas money here and there.
Exactly.
You know how it is. The president's new budget, as usual, the Republicans are against everything in it. And I think they were before it even came out, don't you?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, I think you know, the concern for deficits is touching, but, you know, was strangely absent from 2000 to 2008. That's never going to hold. You know, I think the interesting thing about the thing last Friday, which sort of plays into the, you know, whether or not you should take them seriously about anything going forward, at least on the House side, is that it was impossible to report that event not honestly, but with pure clarity, because the rules of journalism prevent you from saying, you know, one guy knew what he was talking about and the rest of these people were sort of this uneducated mob,
right,
even though they were elected. So you have to say, well, it was a contentious give and take, and both sides had both sides laid gloves on. No, the Republicans didn't lay a single glove on this guy.
Yeah, where's the Fox News? As Fox News called it,
obvious.
Yeah, as Fox News called it, a draw.
Oh, please, you know. Yeah. Only if this is like Las Vegas boxing referees, yeah, maybe. I think with the budget thing, I think once again it's only a matter of drawing a line beyond which you will not be pushed.
Right.
And I haven't seen a clear one of those yet. But the more I look at this, the more I read this, this Paul Ryan budget is the Republican response, and everything's privatized. Medicare's privatized, Social Security's privatized. And what worries me is that the White House will look at this and say, okay, that's the extreme, but let's see, what chunk of this can we slice off?
How do you even with a straight face, Charlie, propose that when you go, we had passed George Bush's privatization of Social Security, you talk about old people eating sand at this point. What would have happened if they gambled away their retirement on the stock market?
I, for one, trust the financial services industry implicitly now, because I know that they've learned their lesson,
right,
and I know that they, ignore the fact that they're giving out huge bonuses and going back into derivatives training again, and coming in front of a reporter they could find and whining about how put upon they've been for the last year.
Yeah. So today
they'd be in the van on the way to Supermax if I was in charge of this thing, but they're not
yeah,
here or there.
Really.
If only you were in charge of this thing. For the first time in 17 years, they are going to be talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell today. What was your take on what the president said in the State of the Union? Because I feel like, you know, what the White House has said, at least their position, is this cannot be overturned permanently without an act of Congress. Like, yes, he could stop it by executive order, but then, obviously it could be overturned.
Yeah, I'm a little bit, I mean, I'm not a constitutional lawyer. I only play one on the Stephanie Miller show.
Yes.
I think he's probably right. I think he probably could, you know, with a stroke of a pen, wipe it out, and then guarantee that the next, you know, Republican who comes in feeling like he should stroke his pen will stroke it right out again and be back, and the policy be back. I think he's correct. I don't think he's been correct about throwing everything onto Congress. I think, you know, letting Congress write the health care bill was a tremendous mistake.
Mm-hmm.
But sooner or later, this institution has to step up and do something.
Right.
You know,
I thought he was pretty clear about, I will work with Congress this year to overturn,
right.
Don't ask, don't tell. So today, obviously, is the first hearing Congress has had in 17 years on this.
Gates is going to stop
some of the discharges. I guess, what is it? That will not take action to discharge service members whose sexual orientation is revealed by third parties or jilted partners.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, one of the most onerous aspects of the law.
How do you suppose the White House counsel defined a jilted partner?
Yeah.
That's a great phrase to be in any official government document.
Yes, you only hate him with the heat that can come from having had sex with him, I can tell.
Oh, I know how the White House counsel did it. They called in Stephanie Miller, special assistant to the president.
There you go.
But I think that's a good thing. And I give tremendous credit to Kirsten Gillibrand for, you know, as a rookie senator facing, you know, a horrible but well-financed opponent in an upcoming primary, you know, for stepping up and being a leader on this. The hearings will be interesting. I mean, I think it cannot be but for the good to have the country see some of the faces of the really dedicated men and women who've been run out of the armed services behind this policy.
Yep. Well,
because there've been a couple of them and they've been very effective. But now you're going to see, I think you're going to see panel after panel after panel of Arabic translators,
yep,
and, you know, gifted engineers and just plain really good soldiers, men and women who got run out, you know, run out of the armed services because this country loses its mind about where men put their peepees. I mean,
well, you know, I mean, this is what I never get the Republican argument. John Boehner said, in the middle of two wars, in the middle of this giant security threat, why would we want to get into this debate? Well, that's exactly why we need to get into this debate, like you just brought it up, because the Arabic translators, because we need every able-bodied, you know, person we can get right now.
You know, I don't know this for a fact, and somebody who's a better historian than I am, certainly, will have to look this up. I don't think they were that concerned about this during World War II.
Yeah.
When they were looking for people.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
If you're looking in a volunteer army, you're looking for people to serve, and it can't just be a bunch of heterosexuals who want money for college. It's got to be everybody in the country.
exactly. Charlie Pierce, author of Idiot America, and our Tuesday pal.
Absolutely, and I'm enormously happy for, again, I'm happy for District 9 because I think any movie in which human beings turn into large bug-like creatures deserves an Oscar.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Charlie.
Bye, guys.
All right, bye, honey. Thank you, Charlie Pierce. All right. By the way, speaking of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, we will finish up Right Wing World after this with what Gambling Bill Bennett thinks about gays in the military.
Oh, that's something to stay tuned for.
Mm. As we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Making right wing wackos everywhere hurl. It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
50 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Justin in Los Angeles, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show on tort reform. Hey, Justin.
Hey, Steph, how you doing?
Good.
You know, George Bush passed tort reform in Texas when he was governor, and it did absolutely nothing to slow down the cost of health care insurance and nothing to decrease the cost of medical malpractice. All it did was take away people's ability to sue.
Right.
When you go into an operation, they leave a scalpel in you or something like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
this nonsense
talking point is just ridiculous. It can be shot down with this Google in Texas.
I mean, like everything they do, it has everything to do with politics. And because trial lawyers give more money to Democrats, you know, it's like I say, they use every issue as an opportunity to union bash.
Yep.
Because, you know. Yep. Thank you, Justin. Appreciate it. Let's go to Kevin in D.C. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, Kev.
Good morning, lovely Stephanie.
Good morning, baby.
Nothing like having your melodious voice in my ear in the morning. Now, and I know you're in New York, and I'm not discounting that, but the thing about having terror trials, this whole money thing, and I guess that is an important concern, But before all of that, it was that, you know, it's going to make New York a target. It's going to make New York a target.
I don't think that's why they changed the decision. To me, what Bloomberg said sounded legitimate, in my opinion. It just, when he got the actual estimates back of what the, you know, security is going to cost, what the logistical thing, how long these trials are going to go on for years.
The businesses it would disrupt in lower Manhattan.
Real estate, yeah. I mean, that's all I'm saying.
I concede it. I think that's fair. But
and I'm just saying, I think there's many places to have a criminal trial in this country that don't present the same cost and logistical nightmares.
But they don't want to. But that's my point.
Trust me, New York is a financial and logistical nightmare. I speak from experience.
They don't want them to have it anywhere. They want to have it in some tribunal. My point is, one of the reasons they say is that it'll make New York or wherever a target. And I'm not susceptible with that because D.C. was hit, and we had the anthrax scare and the shooter and all that. But it's always a target. It's a target before this underwear bomber. It's a target.
Right. Yeah. Of course.
That's just. I thought these tough Republicans, you know, smoke them out and dead alive and all that. And they're being pussycats. Remove the cat part.
Right. Thank you. All right. See, when you don't have a bleep button, you need to. Lori in Chicago, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, I would like to be the official liberal service member of the Stephanie Miller Show.
Woohoo! Thank you.
And I'd like to comment on this whole gays in the military thing. I've been in for 11 years, and I have worked with my fair share of gay people in the military, and I know. And I don't think it's such an issue. I think the people who are making it an issue are the old curmudgeonly white men that share the same opinion as John Boehner, who, by the way, has never served in the military.
Yeah, right. Or old fat white men like Bill Bennett that no self-respecting gay man would ever want to touch with a 10-foot pole.
Right, and I'm in the intelligence community myself, and I know personally people who have been out of the military because they're in the intelligence community, they're human intelligence collectors, and yet they are, you know, booted out or choose to leave because they're not allowed to be who they are. And I would hate to think that our intelligence community is suffering because of segregation, which is exactly what it is. It wasn't popular to bring women into the military when they did. It wasn't popular to bring minorities into the military when they did. And if Bill Clinton honestly would have taken care of this issue, 15 years ago, this would be a non-issue today.
Mm-hmm. So, well, you know, okay. I was saying that it just makes you so like, I guess this is progress, like you were saying, Chris, for the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm going, are you kidding me? We're doing a study? The effect, right.
It's better than ignoring it, I suppose.
I guess, you know, whatever. All right, thank you, Lori. I appreciate it.
We don't want to get any gay intelligence.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Or gay translations.
Yeah.
And
is there a word for fabulous in Arabic? I don't think so.
What do you mean gay people wouldn't go for Bill Bennett? I think a few bears might go for a roll in the hay with Bill Bennett.
Well, no wonder he's so terrified in the shower.
In close quarters, gender preference can make a difference, does make a difference, and I do not think the people who hold that are bigots. I think they are realistic, giving us their best counsel. I would listen to them. I would give them great deference. Mm-hmm. If he wants this issue, he can have it. He promised it. He ran on it, so he wants to follow through on it, fine. I don't think it's a very good issue given what's going on in the world.
Because I've had the shower with homos. No, don't look at me. Stop touching me.
We weren't.
You know, if we were to abort every gay baby, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Phil Bennett would say, crime would go down, wouldn't it?
No.
I know that it's
gays would go down.
If you wanted to reduce crime, you could, if that were your sole purpose, you could abort every black baby in this country.
Well, there'd be a lot less drive-by hairdressings, wouldn't there?
There'd be no window treatments.
There'd be no uplighting.
And less color on your walls.
Am I crazy? What are the polls, Chris? I don't even know. What is it, 60, 70% of the American people think Don't Ask, Don't Tell should be overturned?
Something like that.
What is he talking about? To me, this isn't even a controversial issue anymore.
There are too many wall sconces and army tents.
And yes,
that's got to stop.
And by the way, yeah, you are a bigot if you think that. It's like, what?
Stephanie,
all right.
Stephanie, who uses uplighting anymore? That was kind of the 80s.
Am I thinking track lighting? What am I thinking?
No, track lighting was also the 80s.
All right. Well, I'm stuck there.
Yeah, we still have Christopher Lowell blinds in our house.
Do you really?
The gay couple we bought the house from. That's, yes.
The Christopher Lowell's like a minstrel show.
All right. The Senate Arms Service Committee will address the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell for the first time in 17 years. Kirsten Gillibrand, Democrat of New York.
I believe it's Gillibrand.
Gillibrand says, the military's don't ask, don't tell policy is an unjust, outdated, and harmful rule that violates the civil rights of some of our bravest, most heroic men and women. And, of course, the boner thinks it should be at the top of our list to continue to discriminate against those very same.
John Boner.
That guy's looking at my John Boner.
Secretary Robert Gates will announce that while Congress and the administration work on a permanent repeal of the law, the Defense Department will not take action to discharge service members whose sexual orientation is revealed by third parties or jilted partners. They're expected to offer a specific legislative proposal to repeal the law as well today. So we look forward to all of that.
Absolutely.
And we will also be checking in with Ted Boutros Jr. next hour on Prop 8 trial.
Boutros.
Next hour on the end of the Prop 8 trial and when we can expect to hear a ruling. All right, Stephen.
Had to be said.
Stephen in Orange County, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, Steve.
Hello. Hey, I got a point in that I happen to be kind of a, I guess, dying breed in that I'm a little bit homophobic, you know. Uh-huh. But what I don't understand is all people don't have to like all other people, right?
Yes, that's true.
Why can't we just...
In fact, I can sense already that I wouldn't like you.
Oh, come on.
Oh, Steve, I kid.
I mean, you might actually really like me, but, I mean, at least I'm honest in that I'm a little weirded out by gay people.
Right, but Stephen, it's not about not liking people. This is about equal rights. Wait, stay tuned. Hang on, Stephen. Can you hang on?
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I'm weirded out by people who call radio shows. Those people are freaks.
58 minutes.
I'm worried about people who actually do radio shows.
58 minutes after
even
the
bigger
hour.
Freaks.
I will be back with Stephen from Orange County and much more next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. We have a big, big show coming up this hour.
Do you need some help?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Ted Boutros Jr., law partner to Ted Olson, to talk about the conclusion of the Prop 8 trial out here in California on gay marriage. Representative Joe Sestak, future senator from the great state of Pennsylvania as well, on the Celebrity Hotline. Carbonite Online Backup, you know, is a must for my computer. Don't wait. Back up your computer today for a 15-day free trial plus 2 months free with any subscription. Visit Carbonite.com. Be sure to use the offer code Stephanie, won't you? Why, thank you. Do it for Mama. All right, Stephen in Orange County held a big day for the gay, as you say, Chris.
Yes.
They are debating Don't Ask, Don't Tell for the first time in 17 years today. And also, we will be talking about the Prop 8 trial. Stephen in Orange County wants to say that gays make him a little oogie. Hello, Steve. Thanks for holding.
Hello.
Hello now. All right, so you were saying, aren't you allowed to not like some people? Is that what this is about for you?
No, I'm actually calling, and thank you for the platform, because I think there's probably a lot of people like me, and I'm being honest with myself, I'm being honest with you, mm-hmm. in that I don't, as you guys say, you know, people, I guess, are born gay, and you're not going to change them, and I'm not like that, so.
So do you also not like people with red hair and left-handed people?
No. I hate to say this word. How should I explain it? It's not tolerate. I'm just saying live and let live. Right. And
well, you can't force people to be comfortable with something.
Right.
You know, it's
right. But you use the word. But he used the expression "don't like," Jim. That's why I'm asking. You said you're saying you don't like gay people is what the way you phrased it.
Well, I guess it's a poor choice of words. They do make me uncomfortable. It's just so confusing for a straight, normal, hetero guy. You know, I just don't get it.
You use the word normal. That to me is the problem. You understand it's not normal for a gay person to sleep with someone of the opposite sex, right? It doesn't feel normal to them.
from what I've been told by people like yourself and whatnot. And that, but that's not really the point. It's just there are a lot of people like me, okay? We can debate how I feel, right?
Right. So what's your point on say don't ask, don't tell?
Live and let live, people.
Oh.
I can't make everyone, I can't make you guys think the way I think. I can't make everybody, you know, because everybody.
So you think
like
don't
me?
Ask, don't tell should be overturned?
Hell yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
And I can honestly say I'm happy for myself that I voted no on Proposition 8.
Oh, good for you. I was just about to ask you. So, wow. I thought I was going to go a bridge too far if I asked you if you're for gay marriage.
No, yay. Stephen, breakthrough. You know, it's just whatever you do in your own private, wherever you're at, just, you know, party on.
Party on. Steve, let's give him some canned radio show applause. No, you know what? I totally get where you're coming from. And that's the thing I've always said is I totally respect somebody saying, even if I, you know, very strongly disagree with it, that they don't feel comfortable, whatever. But then my feeling is then don't be gay. Right, Steve? It's like, obviously, if you don't do it. But what do you care? How does it affect you if other people do it?
Yeah. I don't go to gay bars. My wife has some really good friends who, two guys who adopted three boys. I've been to numerous things with them, and I've tried talking to them and tried befriending them. Met them at Barnes & Noble, and they're like, hey, we're on date night, and I just don't even know what to say to them.
You know, you could talk about things with them other than
sports.
Gay stuff, you know.
Well, that's what we do, but I'm uncomfortable. You know, all I'm honest with myself. I'm honest with you. I've tried to. I'm very friendly to them. We get along real well, but it's not like, hey, you know, to my wife, can we call those guys up? Let's have them over.
Okay, well, you know, gays like football. You know, you could talk about Super Bowl or something.
Yeah, I know. The tight ends and the wide receivers.
Yeah.
All right, Steven, there you went. All right, Steve.
I want to use your platform to say, people, can we just live and let live?
Yes, all right. Just get along.
And I want to use my platform to applaud you. Thank you, Steven.
All right,
there we go.
I hear gay bars are a good place to meet women, actually, because they have their guard down. Yeah.
They didn't see that coming.
Right. Listener Ali Sadouk wrote in and said, yes, there is a word for fabulous in Arabic. It's mumtaz.
Mumtaz.
Yes. Mumtaz. So there you go.
There you go.
Mumtaz.
All right.
Mumtaz.
Phil in,
spin on it. You gotta.
Phil in Georgia on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Hello, Phil.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I kind of disagree with your last caller, slightly. You know, I do believe that, you know, we should repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. But I also think that you can't just say live and let live, because until the issue as far as what gay people are, you know, whether it is a choice or whether it is who you are, which I don't believe is ever going to be resolved. But
what difference does it make? What do you mean what they are?
Well,
like we're talking about.
Difference. Here's my point. The point is, if you believe that it's a choice and this is something that you're doing, you know, and it's not really who you are, then it becomes a morality issue. And that now you're saying, okay, well, this person is choosing to be immoral. That's what the other side is saying. Okay, I'm not saying that's how I, you know, that's not what I believe. But you know, as long as it's a morality issue, no matter what scenario you have, whether it be don't ask, don't tell, or gay marriage, none of it's going to be permissible. Nothing's going to be condonable because you believe that the person that's engaging in that act is being immoral.
Yeah, but okay. Here's where this whole debate for me. Who cares? Whether you're born that way or you choose it. I mean, to me, it would be like, you know, the majority decide we want to discriminate against blonde people. And then we determine whether you're born blonde or whether you dyed your hair. Who cares whether you chose it or whether you, I think what's going on in the Prop A trial, and we'll talk to this attorney in a few minutes, is that you cannot just discriminate against a class of people for whatever reason.
Well, I'll tell you why it matters. Let's just take, for instance, this don't ask, don't tell thing. I was in the Army for 8 years, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing. If you are in a platoon and you have some guy that's going out there just shooting innocent people, that is an immoral act, okay? You're not gonna say, okay, well, okay, I can just live with that because that's what the guy is doing.
Are you comparing being gay to shooting innocent people?
It's immoral because you're taking away someone's right to live.
Okay. Well, that's fine. But
okay.
Still, the basis of it is it's still an immoral issue, okay? If I'm looking at this guy, okay, I'm saying, okay, he's being immoral, that's going to affect me. I don't want to see this. I don't want to be part of this. Now, here's what I'm saying. Hang on. If the same issue, if the same guy that's there thinks that being gay is immoral, I know what this guy is doing behind closed doors, okay? I know what he's doing back there, and I think, it's going to affect me the same way. I think you're doing something wrong. I don't agree with it. So now that affects how I operate. Because now I have to work with you when I...
Because you're creeped out by it?
Yes, but that's a matter of opinion, whether it's immoral. And killing someone is illegal. Being gay is not illegal.
But it affects unit cohesion.
Just because you think it's creepy or icky, that's not an excuse.
No. I'm not talking about creepy or icky. You're talking about your level of comfort. That's creepy or icky or whatnot. But if I believe in my core values that this person is wrong, the same way I would feel about it if somebody went out and just killed somebody. If I believe that to my heart,
but you're making a really bad analogy.
I don't understand that.
Morally and legally, you're making a bad analogy, and we thank you for
playing. And thanks for playing Really Bad Analogy.
It's unit adhesion I'd be worried about if someone glued your Johnson to your leg while you're sleeping.
That would be a code red.
Terrible.
For sure. And I think the question is, did you order the code red? I think that's the question.
You ordered the code red.
I did the job.
Did you order the code red?
You're damn right I did.
Okay, let's...
So that's what a code red is. Gluing someone's Johnson to someone's leg.
Exactly.
Got it.
Well,
now.
Someone else's leg. Then that's gay.
Oh, that's your own leg. Well, that's gay.
Jeez.
Ed in Chicago. Hello, Ed.
Don't say hi. Oh, Rebecca's going to kill me. Anyway, I am an airline pilot, and I had a flight a couple weeks ago with a 2-star general who was going back to Afghanistan, is taking a leave and getting his 3rd star. And in the back of the airplane, we had 2 gay male flight attendants.
What? I've never heard of that.
Well, it didn't seem to affect the way that he flew the airplane. He did a pretty good job of it. And I'm listening to last caller saying, well, if it morally, I can't work with that person. We've got military people already who work for the airlines who work with gay people.
Yes.
What is the problem?
Well, they throw all at the center of gravity because they're light in the loafers. The whole calculation.
Exactly.
Jim Louise Ward.
I was making an aviation joke.
Joyce in Nashville, Tennessee on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Hi, Joyce.
Hey, hi, Steph. Thanks for your show. Love it. Listen to it every day.
Thank you.
This issue, it's a male thing. Women, we don't care. We don't care what your preference is. It's a male thing. They need to get over their fear, their uncomfortableness, whatever.
And have you ever noticed that most of the men are the most uncomfortable? Gay men would never, ever want to touch.
No, really, you're safe.
And being in the military, I've been in for 28 years. We don't care.
Right.
Women don't care. It's the male thing. We need to get it repealed. So make sure you get in contact with everybody and get it off the buses. We need everybody we can get.
Yep. All right. Thank you. Let's go to Mark in Illinois. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, Mark.
I have a riddle for Mama.
Okay.
What is the difference between groundhogs and the Cheney family?
What?
Groundhogs are afraid of their shadows, so they hide. The Cheneys are so afraid, they hide in the shadows.
Oh, that was a riddle with a wrapped in a enigma of something else.
Wrapped in a falafel, wrapped in a vest.
Neither rhymes nor is funny. All right, 17 minutes after the hour. Oh, I kid. All right, back with the Oscar nominations and the Prop 8 trial update as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ooh, even I found that to be in bad taste.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Hear ye. Stephanie Miller.
Mm-hmm. 22 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Buddy in Columbus on investigative journalist, future felon, James O'Keefe. Hello, buddy.
Hey, Mama. Hey, two things. Number one on James O'Keefe, he's digging his hole deeper all the time he opens his yap.
Yeah.
But the thing is, he keeps saying, I wanted to investigate and find out if her phone worked.
Yeah.
He could have, like, called her office.
Yeah. Oh, you picked it up. Oh, it works. Yeah,
oh,
thank
yeah.
you.
And, yeah. And Mama?
Yes.
And the second thing on this don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah.
Give me about 25 seconds. All these inbred yahoos should read a little history about a guy called Alan Turing. And Alan Turing invented the computer which allowed us to track the U-boats in World War II. It saved tens of thousands of lives, shortened the war, and helped defeat Hitler. Now, Alan Turing was a gay man. And after all this great work, after the war, he was prosecuted in Britain under sodomy laws and committed suicide. I mean, I bet you all those people he saved on the boats from being torpedoed, do you think they would have cared one whit if he was gay?
yeah, right, exactly. All right, thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. Let's go to Jim in Chicago. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, Jim.
Hi, Mama.
Hello.
My point is that if gays are so conditioned to be badasses in the military, then how come they're letting an issue like what they do is going on behind closed doors of gays affect them? It doesn't make any sense to me that with all the military training they have and with all the psychological counseling that they have access to, that would even be an issue.
Yeah, well, it shouldn't. I can't believe we even have to do a study, but whatever.
Well, it's better than, you know, letting things.
They've done. In fact, they've done polls. Military Times has done. I mean, the large percentage of service members want it overturned. I mean, it's just like, I can't believe we still even talk about it. But right. Dave in Atlanta, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, Dave.
Hey, thanks, guys. Sorry to switch gears here. I had to back up, and I had such a great story from last Friday's Republican bitch slap.
Yes.
I know everybody's giddy, but
welcome
I
to bitch slap with President Obama. Yes.
It was amazing. But I happen to have the worst congressman in all of Washington, Tom Price.
Oh,
the worst. And he is the most brazen, ceaseless, unbelievable liar every day. And Obama shut him down so much. Tom Price is a doctor, and he's written a Republican health bill. And he stood up and he said, Mr. President, what about my bill, blah, blah, blah. Obama said, Tom, your bill is going to cover 30 million people, and it's going to improve coverage and lower everybody's costs, and it's not going to cost anybody a dime. You know, I have to run my bills past teams of healthcare industry experts who have to verify that my plan is viable and workable and rooted in reality.
Yeah, exactly. Yours just has to pass the teabagger test.
Exactly. He said, Tom, it's great politics to walk into a room and say, I'm going to cover everybody, and it's not going to cost a dime. But you know that's not true.
Yep.
And Tom sat down real quiet-like. Oh. It was beautiful. I was jumping out of my chair.
Yeah, it was like Emily Latella. Never mind. Oh, all right. Where's my Hollywood music? Jim, the Academy Award nominations, all of them. All of them were nominated. Pretty much any film out.
Yeah. All 10 of them. That...
Did a film come out that last year? Okay, you're in.
Yeah, you're
it's,
in.
T-Ball. Thanks for trying. Avatar, The Blind Side, District 9, and Education, The Hurt Locker, and Glorious Bastards, Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire, A Serious Man, Up and Up in the Air. Okay. Best,
I've seen Precious, I've seen Up, I've seen Up in the Air.
I haven't seen any of
District
them.
District 9.
Elderly Shut-In. Loser.
I couldn't watch all of Precious. It was too... disturbing.
Precious?
No, you know what? At the end, it's very uplifting, though.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you should have stick around to the end.
Okay, best actor, Jeff Bridges in Crazy Heart, George Clooney in Up in the Air, Colin Firth in A Single Man, Morgan Freeman in Invictus, Jeremy Renner in The Hurt Locker. Best actress, Sandra Bullock. I vote for her. Didn't even see it. Love her. Just for Miss Congeniality, I vote for her.
Yeah, but she also did All About Steve this year, which is up for Razzies.
I don't care. My love for her is just, it's unblemished. Sandra Bullock in The Blind Side, Helen Mirren in Last Station, Carrie Mulligan in an Education, Gabrielle, I can't pronounce her name, she won't get it, and it's Precious.
Gabby Sibere?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Meryl Streep in Julia and Julia, I did see that, she was awesome.
I didn't see that one.
Oh, that's probably because of your deep-seated hatred for Rachel Ray. It probably makes you avoid all
cooking that woman.
Films of any kind.
Yeah.
No, that is not true. I like cooking shows. I just can't stand certain personalities like Rachel Ray and Jada De Laurentiis.
Hmm. All right. Amy Winehouse, Jim, has admitted being a bisexual.
What?
I'm surprised she remembers it if she is. You got to give her some applause for that. Oh,
just woke up next to a chick one morning.
I must be bisexual.
Oh my God. I woke up. That's the surprising thing.
Well, yeah.
Steve in Richmond, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, Steve.
Thanks, Steph. You know, I was calling about that moralistic homophobe that called you a little bit ago. He makes the same mistake that most, you know, people who approach this argument from religious perspectives makes, and that is that they think their morals are the only ones that exist.
Right.
They attack it from, you know, this thing of, well, it's against my morals, as if that makes it against everyone's morals. And
mm-hmm.
Those of us who are free thinkers and atheists resent that approach, resent that the implications of that.
Yep, absolutely. All right, let's go to Jeannie in Florida on Don't Ask, Don't Tell as well. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi. I was going to point out that if you're Mormon, you don't think coffee is moral, so none of the Mormons can serve with any coffee drinkers, according to that guy.
That's true.
Exactly. Hmm. And you'd have to go, you know, bitch-slapping people in random Starbucks, apparently, if you were really committed to your... Wouldn't you?
Sure.
Okay.
How dare you?
You have to stop other people from doing immoral things as well. You'd be slapping lattes out of people's hands left and right. Mochaccino spraying everywhere.
Joe. Don't even get me started on the caramel macchiatos.
Oh, Frappuccino is like Satan's drink. Joel, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hey there. If that guy says that unit cohesion is affected because in his heart of hearts he knows being gay is wrong, what if in his heart of hearts he knows being a Muslim is wrong or being an atheist is wrong?
There you go.
Ban them too?
Yep, there you go. All right. It's, you know, some callers' arguments so easy to shoot holes in. Anyone can play.
Well,
all right.
It wasn't really an argument. He was just saying you felt uncomfortable.
It was just a stupid comment.
But you know
really
what?
I'm just honest.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate
being uncomfortable.
I'd probably never be his friend in real life, but, you know, I'm glad he has some of those.
I don't think he said.
Coming up, Ted Boutros.
Golly.
Boutros? Golly. Ted Boutros. But Ted Olson's partner on the Prop 8 trial next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
February 2nd at 7:20 and 30 seconds,
Stephanie Miller
emerged reluctantly but alertly in Punxsutawney, PA, and stated in Groundhoggies, I definitely see a shadow.
I always get up reluctantly and hungover. Okay, 34 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Well, a big day. For the first time in 17 years, they are debating Don't Ask, Don't Tell in a congressional hearing. And the Prop 8 trial just on gay marriage just concluded out here in California. Mm-hmm. Last week, we have Ted Boutros, who is Ted Olson's law partner. Ted, I should point out, I needed to point out that you are a law partner and not a partner.
Yes. We've had some confusion in this case, but it's been interesting.
So the trial wrapped up last week. Now, what does that mean? It's still going to be a few weeks before we get a verdict, or what?
Yes, we finished putting all the evidence in last week, and now we'll file some post-trial briefs, and then the judge will have closing arguments probably in a month or so back in San Francisco, and then issue his ruling after that.
Wow. So, I didn't realize that's how it goes. So it's going to actually be, well, we don't know exactly, but several weeks at least.
Exactly.
Okay. So, you know, I was reading a Time magazine article, I don't know if you saw it, but, you know, they were basically saying after nearly 3 weeks of evidence, no matter what happens, the debate over gay marriage will never again be the same. And I have to agree, don't you, that this is fascinating, really just on a legal level, isn't it?
It really is. What I found remarkable was the fact that as the evidence came in, it was overwhelmingly clear that our side is right, that Proposition 8 and restrictions on gay marriage are unconstitutional and simply irrational as a policy matter. And putting aside the legal arguments, we always thought we had the better of the legal arguments. To see the evidence, to see our arguments on the one side and the paltry arguments on the other side in the light of day, in a courtroom, I think really changed the dynamic in the whole debate on same-sex marriage in this country.
Well, I agree. I mean, you had people, everybody from Cindy McCain to Herbert Hoover's granddaughter speaking out during this trial in favor of gay marriage. I mean, it is interesting at the same time as Don't Ask, Don't Tell is coming up again, which most people think that's just a, you know, like that ship has sailed, like in terms of, you know, not discriminating against gay people. And obviously the polls show that, gee, people aren't as ready for gay marriage as they are for, let's say, overturning Don't Ask, Don't Tell. But I agree with you that I think this trial really did move the debate forward, at least.
Well, you know, when you had David Boies and Ted Olson, people from different sides of the political spectrum joining together, I think that changed the debate. Then in the trial, Stephanie, what was just stunning, the experts called by the proponents of Proposition 8, the opponents of gay marriage, they admitted fact after fact that supported our position, and they were left with very, very little to work with. And to me, that, in some ways, that was the most compelling proof that they're wrong and on the wrong side of history on these issues, and there really is no good argument to support these restrictions on same-sex marriage. It was really remarkable.
Well, I think, you know, I love the sort of basic tenet of the case. It's sort of, you know, people repeat things, and it's taken to be common wisdom, but you guys basically said, prove it.
Exactly.
Prove the effect on straight marriage.
Exactly. And
prove
and
the damage.
They were unable to prove anything. In fact, their lawyer had admitted he didn't know what the harm to traditional, what they called traditional marriage, what you just called straight marriage. They couldn't prove it. They called an expert to the
Sorry, stand. I meant to say opposite marriage.
Yeah, thank you. Opposite marriage. And the expert they called to the stand couldn't identify any study, any facts, any evidence to support the notion there would be any harm to anyone, and he admitted it would be better for children, it would be better for gay and lesbians to have marriage, it would be better for society. He even said it would be more American to recognize same-sex marriage, more American. So I thought that was a pretty good headline out of his testimony.
Well, you know, basically Time Magazine talking about governments at every level have created one set of rules for heterosexuals in America and another for gays and lesbians. So, I mean, legally, I know that some gay activists are still nervous. They fear this reception, you know, the reception you'll get at the Supreme Court on this, that this was too soon. But speak to the legal argument there, because, you know, somebody in Time Magazine compared it to the U.S. ruling the 2000 Lawrence versus Texas decision decriminalizing gay sex.
Yes, it's the one area...
Which basically said, you know, a majority cannot, it's not right. enough to justify discriminatory treatment of any minority, correct?
That's correct, and that's the fundamental principle here. Really, if you look at it in our society, the one area where the majority is, and the governments are allowed to discriminate against a minority group is in the area of gay rights. And Don't Ask, Don't Tell is an example of that. The Defense of Marriage Act at the federal level is an example of that. There have been these ballot initiatives around the country. But over 30 of them have really literally only had one purpose, and that was to strip away the rights of a minority group. And the Equal Protection Clause, the Due Process Clause of our Constitution says that's wrong. So we think that from a constitutional standpoint, the arguments are extremely strong. And I think as we move forward and worked with a number of the advocacy groups who had some concern when we first launched the suit, we have joined together. They've been extraordinarily helpful. And as we put together our case with input from them, I think it's been just made clearer that this is an unconstitutional law, and it makes no sense, and it only hurts people.
Now, opponent of yours is quoted in Time Magazine as saying, what has struck me is that the plaintiffs have tried to put Christianity on trial rather than Prop 8.
That's simply ridiculous. And in fact, what we said was the only relevance of religion in this case was that it demonstrated this broad array and this broad political apparatus, which was formidable, put together by the proponents of Proposition 8 through the nation to array such a huge group of citizens against a minority group and show the political power imbalance. And it really is a historic thing. It wasn't just religious groups, but we focused on the arguments that were being made in support of Proposition 8 and demonstrated that they were irrational. Some of them were hateful messages. We demonstrated that one of the official proponents of Proposition 8 was putting out on a website and giving speeches about bestiality, all the kind of messages that are completely outrageous, and we linked those to the official campaign as one aspect of the campaign. But we said over and over again, we're big believers in freedom of religion, but the principle that we have in our country is that majority religions can't impose, as a matter of law, the religion that they believe in on everybody else.
Well, you know, no one's ever answered this question to my satisfaction. I don't know about you, Ted, but this whole how would it be possible to legislate in today's world on things in the Bible? I mean, wouldn't we literally have to, you know, kill people that eat shrimp and, you know, you can go down the list of, you know what I'm saying? If that's what you're using as a...
Absolutely. It would be, we'd have to start from scratch with our laws. And there are so many things, if you just looked at the Bible, that would require different laws, different principles. And our marriage institution is civil. It is not religious. And it has been from the beginning of time. We called a wonderful professor from Harvard, Nancy Cott, who's an expert, wrote a book on the history of marriage. And she tracked through how marriage in the United States has always been a civil institution. And it's served purposes like ensuring stability and those sorts of things. It has never been a religious institution. There have been religious pieces to it for religions, but the state-sponsored...
Right. Well, yeah, it occurs to me we wouldn't even be having this conversation because I, in fact, did eat shrimp last night. So I would be dead now, and we wouldn't even be...
You'd be gone.
Yeah. But, you know, I that's the thing is I'm glad that literally, legally... A lot of these, you know, because these are things I've heard from callers on radio shows for years that you're just like, for instance, in Time Magazine, Archbishop Joseph Kurtz is quoted saying, the difference between a man and a woman allows them to make the fundamentally unique commitment of marriage, ordered to love and the creation and nurturing of new life. But here we go again. You can't do that legally, right? Because what about straight couples that don't have kids? You know, if you say marriage is basically about having kids.
That's right. And it's never been a requirement in this country that to get married you have to want to have kids, you have to be able to have kids. We questioned the proponent's expert on the fact that murderers on death row in prison can get married. They don't have to have ever met the person they want to marry. They have had no sexual relations with them. They're not going to have kids. They're evil people. But gay couples who want to get married, who are in love and who are great citizens, can't get married. That makes absolutely no sense.
Listen, I lived out in L.A. when there was any bimbo in California could marry Eric Menendez if she wanted to. They had.
That's exactly right. I mean, it makes no sense to me. It's one of the best examples.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Yep. Also, here's another, you know, just straight people quoted in this Time Magazine article. Some voters simply fear that not enough is known yet about the effect on children who are raised by gay parents or even how stable or lasting gay marriages may turn out to be. You get their point, Ted, in relation to, say, John Edwards' marriage or Tiger Woods or something, that they may not be able to achieve the same sort of sanctity.
Exactly. The opposite sex marriages have been so stable that we've seen, especially high-profile people lately. And in fact, those are some of the examples we've tossed out, too. And there, the evidence is in, and it's overwhelming. We put on people from Cambridge, Columbia, Harvard, Yale, with studies that demonstrated that kids raised by same-sex couples have wonderful childhoods. There's no difference in terms of their growing up and the environments they're in. The in terms of stability, the proponents of Proposition 8, their own expert admitted that if marriage were allowed, it would add stability. It would be better for gay couples. So the evidence is in, and it's overwhelmingly in our favor on these issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, Time Magazine concludes, some observers say the early rounds have already gone to gay marriage supporters, no matter what the courts ultimately say. Who remembers the outcome of the Scopes trial? Evolution lost the battle, though it largely carried the day, said one commentator. So I have to conclude by asking you, what do you think the conclusion will be, and what do you think happens then?
We think we're going to win this case. At the end of the day, I do agree that whatever the result at whatever stage, the fact that we were able to put this evidence in without really any real dispute and demonstrate that the myths that are out there about gay marriage are false, I think changes the debate, advances the debate, and ultimately will lead to gay men and lesbians having the right to marry in this country.
Now, Ted, because I get confused with all the legal, you know, obviously we've got propositions all over the country, you've got this, you've got that. What happens? What happens if you win?
There are a couple ways for it to go. It depends on the nature of the ruling. One ruling could be that Proposition 8, because of its unique characteristics, violates due process and equal protection. That would govern in California because it would only focus on Proposition 8. But the rationale of the ruling, depending on how broad it is, how narrow it is, if we were to prevail, would serve as a launching pad for advancing the rights of others in other states.
So will this go to the Supreme Court no matter what, win or lose?
I think that's right. Now, the Supreme Court, of course, has discretion whether to hear cases, but we have really wanted to get this case to the Supreme Court to get clarity and get certainty, and we think we will prevail because we're right on the law, and the court's own cases that say marriage is a fundamental liberty, it's a fundamental right, and plus Lawrence v. Texas and the cases dealing with gay rights in the Supreme Court recognize that this kind of discrimination against this group violates the Constitution.
Yeah, but you know what I'm sure makes you nervous as well is this awful ruling they just made on corporate money. You know, you're thinking, gee, they were all saying they wouldn't be judicial activists, you know, until it came to something they wanted to do. So what is your feeling on the Supreme Court?
Well, on that one, since my partner Ted Olson was the lawyer who won that case.
I forgot about that.
Okay. Then he knows what
did I say doing. Awful? I did mean it. I'm sorry.
So we feel like we've got a good legal team and we have a good sense of where the court's going to go. And it is, you know, it's at 5-4 majority in that case, but we think when we put the arguments together here, there are more than five justices when you look at the full range of arguments here, and that goes counter to a lot of the conventional wisdom, a lot of the law professors who keep spouting off on these issues without really looking at them closely say, you know, you're never going to get five justices or six justices. We think that's just wrong.
All right. Well, Ted, thank your law partner, Ted Olson, for fighting for gay people and also for destroying democracy as we know it in America. Thanks for all that.
Busy week.
Thank you. All right. Ted Boutros, Jr., thanks for fighting the good fight. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
There he goes. Oops. All right. I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. Way to go.
Yeah. All right. What am I doing? I have some principles. 47 minutes after the hour, back with Representative Joe Sestak, next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
That's the smartest thing I've ever heard anyone say about anything.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 52 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-1-2, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. You know, there's not many people I refer to as future senator, unless, of course, it's true. Future senator, current Congressman Joe Sestak from the great state of Pennsylvania. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning, Stephanie, and it is a good morning.
It is indeed. So, Congressman, lots to talk about, but let's talk about the Gender Equity Act.
Absolutely. I submitted this piece of legislation the other day, and I actually took it from the Shriver Report called A Woman's Nation, because for the very first time in the history of America, more women are employed than men. And imagine if you shut your eyes for a moment and opened them up. Nobody was working in America, but you have 100 workers to start employing, and 51 of the 100 are women. Would you construct your work rules of the workplace as Caucasian males have done so for the last couple centuries?
Mm-hmm.
Or would you start to take account of issues like pregnancies and how not to lose them, or sick leave for domestic violence, flexible work options, tax credits to incentivize, and even when you ask women to go off to STEM curricula for child care and others? I saw this in the military, as you did, Stephanie. We began to try to, how do we keep these combat pilots, these women in the service, when they're about to go off for, then have children? And so that's what this legislation was about.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and I think that's the thing, is that some issues, people go, oh, you know, women have equal rights now, so it's not an issue. But I think that, you know, it really is amazing in this day and age, even more so, isn't it, that we don't have gender equity in many ways in the workplace.
You're absolutely right. I mean, not only do women earn about 73 cents per the dollar that for the same job that a male does, but you actually
in many jobs, about 80% of the jobs where the employer doesn't provide for sick leave, you can be fired, laid off, if you take off to have birth of a child. In fact, if you know in discrimination, you can have, there's no arbitrary limits for race or national origin when you're discriminated against, but there is for gender discrimination. And so when you walk through this and you say, wait a moment, it's 51% of our workforce is now women, how do we better accommodate them? Because this isn't just about rugged individualism. America's character is based upon a wonderful alliance between rugged individualism and the common enterprise. How can we ensure that we get the most out of them, so to speak, by having the child care needs or other types of ways? And that's what this piece of legislation does. Wonderful work by Marie Shriver and the Center for American Progress.
Yep, absolutely. Congressman, well, by the way, you wouldn't believe what I go through here with the men I work with. That's a subject we'll talk about at another time.
Hey.
So we'll work on.
I understand. I grew up in a family of six sisters.
So, Congressman, I have to ask you: you're obviously the highest-ranking military officer ever elected to Congress, and today is the first time in 17 years they're debating "Don't Ask, Don't Tell" again. Give us your take on that. I mean, isn't it this just way past time to overturn this policy?
We should have never had the policy. You're out there, and I know I went to war with a certain percentage of men and women who were gay. Public surveys tell us that. How can I come home and say they don't have equal rights, particularly in a time of war where we need these wonderful linguists and other types of warriors that truly are just want to serve their nation? And, you know, when you get onto a aircraft carrier and there's 5,000 youth, those 5,000 youth average age about 19 and a half. They don't care if someone's gay. The military leadership has to understand that they're being led upon this, and that's not good for leaders to be lagging behind those that are supposed to be following their leadership.
Well, that's what I don't get when you have John Boehner making these arguments like, oh, not in a time when we're in two wars, we shouldn't be debating this. Isn't this exactly the time we should be getting every able-bodied American that wants to serve serving?
Without a question. I mean, we have lost thousands of good men and women during this period of two conflicts overseas. I can remember when I was a younger officer and someone would come up to you and they'd say, Captain, I need to tell you, and all you were thinking about is, please don't tell me. You're too good. I don't want to lose you. Look, we worked through the issue of integration of African Americans into our service. We worked through the issue of having women in combat roles to our service. I remember the night I arrived off Afghanistan and a young 27-year-old F-18 woman pilot went up, and she was the one out of eight pilots that strafed and saved four special forces after eight of them had been surprised and four of them lost their lives. She was the one. And thank goodness we had her that evening. And now we'll work through this issue. We should have done it last year. I wrote a letter to the president. I testified. I've been out there. This is a matter of not just equality, but once again, it's the common enterprise that is going to be rewarded by having these wonderful men and women serving in harm's way for us.
Yep, you are a fine American, and I think you're right on everything, if you don't mind my saying so. Representative Joe Sestak, you ought to be a senator someday.
Well, thank you. We're actually traveling over through Center County in the middle of Pennsylvania. We've gone 26 counties in 23 days.
Go,
go. 35 events.
Go, go, Joe.
On the Magellan, the train against Harry Dewey.
All right.
Against Dewey.
We are out of
a great time.
We are out of time. You go get them. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Steph.
There he goes. Go, go, Joe. All right. That's it for us. Don't forget Hump Days with Hal Sparks tomorrow on The Stephanie Miller Show.